dope. I'm going to use that in my vocabulary now. I'm going to go around to people and be like, you're so dope.
In Father Teresa's Wine Cellar, we believe all oppression is intersectional. And this means our analysis of current events frequently includes discussion of difficult and explicit content. Any combination of the following topics could be included in our show: murder, rape, war, climate change, racism, sexism, violence, sexual violence, homophobic violence, heterocentrism, discrimination and abuse against individuals of nonconformist sexuality, domestic violence, child abuse, child rape, child neglect, elderly abuse, verbal abuse, police brutality, microaggressions, ableism, cyberbullying, genital mutilation, ideological extremism, and people just being total fucking assholes.
Alright, so Phoenix Kaliter is not well. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and put together a short program here. And on the program, I will be riffing a little bit about some things that I've come across, a little bit of what Phoenix Kaliter has had in the show notes, and there will be audio from Jim Hightower and the Green News Report, WineCellarMedia.com.
I mean, Jesus was a white man too, but you know, it's like he was a historical figure. I mean, that's a verifiable fact, as is Santa. I just want the kids watching to know that. Yeah. But my point is, how do you just revise it, you know, in the middle of the legacy of the story and change Santa from white to black?
Yeah.
All right. So now, so the first thing that I want to riff on here that I found pretty gosh darn interesting, it comes from one of the folks that I follow in the social media. It's this Euro white trans woman that I follow in the privately owned social media, and she posted a link to this outlet called Forbes. All right, so now let's take a look here first. Right, so according to the Wikipedia, Forbes is an American family-controlled business magazine, published bi-weekly, and it features original articles on finance, industry, investing, and marketing topics. And then from Forbes.com, their own description of themselves: Forbes is a global media company focusing on business, investing, technology, entrepreneurship, leadership, and lifestyle. Right? So, and I've always just understood it to just be, this is what folks that want to know about rich money stuff are reading. Like, that's my understanding. Like, this Rich Money Talk magazine right here, Forbes. All right, that's my basic blue-collar span-away guy understanding of the Forbes. Now, what this white transgender individual shared was this interesting thing. It's this is apparently a Forbes contributor named Peter J. Riley, and Peter J. Riley got this article approved, and it is an editor's pick, and as it went up August 3rd, and apparently it only has 6,616 views. This is on Forbes, and the title of the article is Lesbians Want a Church of Their Own and IRS Approves. And so, now I find this interesting. Remember, this is, sort of a transphobia story. Now, what the heck darn is that? Let's take a look here. Now, he starts with, Pussy Church of Modern Witchcraft. That is the title of this church. Pussy Church of Modern Witchcraft. Might strike you as something you might find in The Onion, rather than here on a Forbes tax blog, but it is the real deal. You can find it on the Charity Navigator and GuideStar, and he links to both of these outlets, Charity Navigator and GuideStar. The IRS recognized it as a 501c3 organization and went the extra step of recognizing the PCMW, Pussy Church of Modern Witchcraft, as a church, the most enviable of all tax statuses, exempt not only from income tax, but also from transparency. That filing from, that filing from 990 creates. The church does not have to apply for exempt status, but it is a prudent step, particularly for an innovative organization like PCMW. My source indicated that the approval process was reasonably quick and there was no pushback from the IRS. Now, in this article, is included an image of some folks holding flags. There's a lot of different flags here. And one flag that they're holding up has red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and purple. But I don't really know all the flags, but it's Pride in London and their banner, and folks are holding some flags, and it looks like they're on a building. And it's sort of a reminder of the of what we covered recently a couple of weeks ago, how some transphobic folks were at a Pride march. All right, now the controversy, this article continues. To understand what's going on with PCMW, you need to be aware of a conflict that is going on between some radical feminist and the transgender community. It is, and you know what? That whole thing is also a link. No. That's just an option to share the article with your Twitter followers. I've been dupedified. All right. So it's an ongoing conflict between radical feminists and the transgender community. It is long running. A recent manifestation occurred during the London Pride Parade. Quote, anti-trans protesters, mostly made up of trans-exclusionary radical feminists, TERFs, invaded this weekend's London Pride celebration, disrupting and eventually being allowed to lead the parade by officials. End quote. The article was by Rose Damou, and they take the transgender side of the controversy in her report on the incident. That is what seems to be close to the consensus in progressive circles, framing the issue as one of discrimination against an oppressed minority. Ground zero of the controversy was probably the Michigan Women's Festival. And he links to all these articles that he went through while creating this one. Michigan's Women's Festival. Michelle Goldberg's article in The New Yorker titled What is a Woman? Might be a good place to start if this 40 years war is news to you. If you want to dig into the rad femme side, there is a collection of essays, Female Erasure, What You Need to Know About Gender Politics, War on Women, The Female Sex, and Human Rights. Those are some that, and he also linked to them if you want the transphobic side, the rad femme side. Let's take a look here. All right, had to let the cat Jamal out of the office through the magic of pause. All right, now continuing with the article, on Forbes, right, the what I understand to be the rich people money talking magazine, this is a tax blog, so that's enough on the underlying controversy. But the way some people consider TERF, to be a slur. And he says, I don't know if there is a satisfactory substitute. I did see gender critical suggested. It took me a long time to come up with non-conventionally tax complaint in a compliant in a neutral way of describing tax protesters. But that term was not taken off. So I hesitate to even make an attempt with TERF. I will try GCRF for a start, but it probably won't come up often. So, gender critical radical feminist. So he's trying, like, as a journalist, this individual's trying to call folks what they want to be identified as. And I think TERF isn't a slur. TERF is, you know what? If you've been listening to The Wine Cellar for a while, you know that. TERF, that's actually the title of an episode. TERF is not a slur. Yeah, because it's trans-exclusionary radical feminist. These folks identify as radical feminists, and they do exclude trans women. It works, right? And because of the vowel in there, it makes it so it's an acronym that you can just spit out as a word. All right. So the journalist continues. Who can join PCMW? And he has a link to the website. From the website, we get, quote, all women and girls are welcome to join Pussy Church as congregants. We also need women who can serve Pussy Church in growing and strengthening our congregation. If you are able to offer your time, skills, money, or other resources in support of Pussy Church, please contact us. A woman is an adult female human. A girl is a minor female human. The Pussy Church serves women and girls only. Males are not... You see how they go from women to males, not women to men. That's... The transphobia comes jumping in at you there. Males are not permitted to participate, regardless of how they identify. We expressly reject the concepts of gender identity, transgenderism, and gender as being meaningful to defining what a woman or girl is. There's something oxymoronic about that. I can't quite put my index on it. Now, let's take a look here. Stop this gosh darn thing. There we go. Now, the Articles Incorporation. Shoot. There. The Articles Incorporation elaborate. Excuse me. A little more exclusive requirements for trustees. It says, who can lead PCMW? A trustee position shall be, ooh, and unpause, had to pause it for a morning sneeze fit, 2:32 a.m. as I record this here, August 9th, 2018. Now they continue on, who can lead PCMW? A trustee position shall be open to all those who possess the following qualifications. 1, being female at birth. 2, a testimony to an experience of the new birth in lesbian feminism. 3, evidence of a consistent lesbian life. 4, evidence like pornography? 4, an indication of a willingness to contribute regularly to the financial support of the church of which she must be a member. 5, acceptance of the tenets of faith as set forth in the lesbian heresy? I don't know that word. By Sheila Jeffries, gynecologist, ecologist. The Metaphysics of Radical Feminism by Mary Daly. Sister Outsider by Audre Lorde. And other texts as designated from time to time by the trustees. That was all. That was number 5. Number 6, this is for being a trustee, having reached at least 18 years of age. 7, having regularly attended services of and supported the church for a period of at least 3 consecutive months prior to the date of the individual's desire to become a trustee. 8, agreement to being governed by the church as may be amended from time to time. And that is the end of that list. The requirements to vote for trustees are a little less rigorous. All right. And this is this list. 1, being female at birth. 2, a testimony of an experience of a new birth in lesbian feminism. 3, evidence of consistent lesbian life again. Again, with the willingness, this 5 is the same text, 6 is the 18 years, 7, agreement to being governed by the church, amended from time to time. All right, that's the end of those two lists. Article continues, and this is on Forbes, Fancy Money Talking Folk magazine. So the PCMW is open to all women and girls as defined by PCMW, but lesbian-led. This sort of thing happens with religious groups. Much of the leadership of the Catholic Church is exclusively male and pledged to celibacy. In Protestant churches, you will find discussions about whether elders must be married men, so PCMW is open to all women and girls as defined by PCMW, but governance is entirely in the hands of lesbians. It invokes the structure of 7th century Calvinism in New England, where you had to prove you were saved to qualify for full church membership. Depending on what state or country you are in, you could not have those sort of rules in an accounting firm. For example, there are laws about discrimination based on sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity. Even holding an exclusive meeting in a public venue can be an issue in some jurisdictions. There was a fight about about that when RadFem 2013 was held in London. So a cynical bastard might think that this enterprise is a clever way to end a runaround existing and proposed anti-discrimination laws, because religious liberty trumps those sorts of things, which the Supreme Court recently confirmed in Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Rights Commission. it is a lengthy article. And I read it, and the keep in mind white trans woman that shared it read it, and we found it to be responsible journalism, very generic, not heavy on opinion. Like it's basically that sort of journalism that's out there for you to consume the information, click the links if need be, and then you form an opinion on that. And we found that interesting, and we'll go ahead and link to it.
Women are the property of their husbands in Saudi Arabia, and they treat them like dogs, worse than dogs. And so, again, the weirdo, crazy feminists run around worshiping them, a lot of liberal women I know actually go out and marry some Islamicist that'll boss them around and slap them upside the head, I guess because they're so pissed that Western men won't treat them bad.
Many Americans can't believe that political coups are part of our country's history. But consider the Wall Street Pooch of 1933. Never heard of it? It was a corporate conspiracy to oust Franklin Roosevelt, who had just been elected president. With the Great Depression raging and millions of families financially devastated, FDR had launched several economic recovery programs to help people get back on their feet. To pay for this crucial effort, he had the audacity to raise taxes on the wealthy, and this enraged a group of Wall Street multimillionaires. Wailing that their, quote, liberty to grab as much wealth as possible was being shackled, they accused the president of mounting a class war. To pull off their coup, they plotted to enlist a private military force made up of destitute World War I veterans who were upset at not receiving promised federal bonus payments. One of the multimillionaire's lackeys reached out to a well-respected advocate for veterans, retired Marine General Smedley Darlington Butler. They wanted him to lead 500,000 veterans in a march on Washington to force FDR from the White House. But they chose the wrong general. Butler was a patriot and lifelong soldier for democracy, who in his later years was critical of corporate war profiteering, and he was repulsed by the hubris and treachery of these Wall Street aristocrats. He reached out to a reporter, and together they gathered proof to take to Congress. A special congressional committee investigated and found Butler's story, quote, alarmingly true, leading to public hearings with Smedley Darlington Butler giving detailed testimony. This is Jim Hightower saying, by exposing the traitors, this courageous patriot nipped their coup d'etat in the bud. But their sense of entitlement reveals that we must beware of the concentrated wealth of the imperious rich, for it poses an ever-present danger to your and my majority rule.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
All right, let's take a quick briefing. Phoenix Collider always, like some folks, you might notice, like some, like when we do short shows, we may do like only two or three stories and maybe a brief riff or conversation and some tangents. Or, you know, a big show, we might hit like 5 stories. Wow. But like, just riffing off of the headlines real quickly here. This is how much Phoenix Collider finds and reads for show prep. Notorious Ferguson protester ousted in a night of victories and disappointments for insurgent candidates. That's coming off of TheIntercept.com. In a first wave of major primaries, since an upset by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, it energized the grassroots wing of the party. The Democrats turned out on Tuesday night in surging numbers in Michigan. Well over 100,000 more people voted in the Democratic gubernatorial primary than in the Republican contest. And in Missouri, Democratic turnout was up 85% since 2010. The enthusiasm among Democrats meant that Republicans needed everything they had in an Ohio special election in a district that Donald Trump carried by more than 10 points. Republicans struggled to pull ahead by even 1 percentage point, despite a rally by Trump, a visit by Mike Pence, and $3.5 million from Paul Ryan's Super PAC, and 2 Republican National Committee field offices, with provisional ballots still to be counted. The race is too close to call. All right, that's in Phoenix Collider's notes. Also from USAtoday.com in Phoenix Collider's show notes. Voters have their say in 5 states. Results shape November election. In Washington, a nail-biter in Ohio, a resounding victory for labor unions in Missouri, and a sharp pivot toward the general election across the country. Those were just a few highlights from elections, Jesus Christ, from elections held across 5 so many fucking pop-ups. Why is my pop-up blocker not working on this goddamn website? Holy shit, USA Today found a way around the pop-up blocker. Nice. Okay. From Michigan to Washington State, Ohio's special election soaked up most of Tuesday's political spotlight as Republican Toy Balderson clung to a narrow lead over Democrat Danny O'Connor. The race was still too close to call early Wednesday after several thousand provisional and absentee ballots still to be counted, according to the Ohio Secretary of State. But with all precincts results in, Balderson led O'Connor by 1,754 votes, or about 9%. And keep in mind, Phoenix Collider picks these stories. She has an opinion on each one. Like, she could do long form shows by herself. Also off of, oh wait, let's see. She has 2 more off of USAtoday.com. All right, these are Phoenix Collider's extended show notes you get to take a look into here. I don't need, like, I'd be at work while she's doing these. I don't even know what's going on. CVS to offer nationwide telemedicine service through smartphone video. And this is on USA Today by Nathan Bomey. CVS plans to offer new nationwide telemedicine service in its continuing efforts to revamp the company and complete with potential online pharmacy options like Amazon. More money for Jeff Bezos. And my pop-up blocker does not fucking work on this website. thanks to, think of it as a digital doctor. The drugstore giant, there it is. Yeah, I have protection on, but yeah, apparently CVS is smooth. Drugstore giant CVS Health plans to offer a nationwide service to treat easy-to-diagnose maladies and other medical issues via its smartphone application. The telemedicine service will be offered for diagnosis of conditions such as colds, flu, skin issues, and general wellness matters. The video visits service, which will be provided on smartphones, will cost $59 and can be paid by credit card or debit card. CVS, which is close to acquiring health insurance from Aetna, said insurance coverage on the telemedicine service will be available in the coming months. The move reflects an expansion on the CVS MinuteClinic brand. It comes as a drugstore chain seeking the approval of a deal to acquire Aetna in a sweeping plan to diversify its business. Continuing, Phoenix Collider's extended show notes. USAtoday.com. Women more likely to die of a heart attack if treated by a male doctor, a study finds. People know how I am about a study finds. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me worth a fuck, but I always worry about the a study finds. Let's take a listen here, actually.
They may be more likely to survive a heart attack if their emergency room doctor is also a female. That's the finding of a new study.
But there are still some questions surrounding this gender difference. 13ABC's Melissa Veitch takes a look. Melissa.
Well, this is a significant study. 500,000 women and men over a 10-year period. So, again, it was a very extensive study. Found that female heart attack patients who were cared for by female ER doctors were 2 to 3 times more likely to survive than those cared for by male doctors.
Didn't until this happened.
At 34, Susie never thought she would have a heart attack.
I was stacked against the odds. It was impossible.
Yet her symptoms spoke differently.
It woke me up. Felt like somebody dropped a ton of bricks on my chest. And it hurt. There was a lot of pressure, solid pressure in the center of my chest.
Susie went on to have a second heart attack after that. Trips to the ER, Susie says she had male doctors who at the time could have dug deeper to diagnose a first heart attack.
Woman to woman, I think a female doctor would have went into more detail as far as questioning.
The findings of the PNAS study back up a few concerns Susie brings up. Dr. Courtney Keel is an emergency room doc with Mercy Health.
I think anybody who works with a population that they're a part of has a little bit more of an insight into it.
Dr. Keel says that is generally a two-way relationship.
Female patients may be a little bit more open to talking to female doctors a little bit more because just that kind of stigma of feeling judged possibly and kind of being able to relate to each other kind of does help when you're trying to see patients.
Another reason, women present with different heart attack symptoms.
But women a lot of times will have symptoms that are just maybe some nausea, maybe just this weird sense that something's going on that's weird and they just can't explain it. Dizziness, things that don't necessarily scream, oh, something's going on with my chest.
Symptoms that can mimic stress and anxiety, but increasingly both male and female doctors alike are taking more seriously in women. And that's why women need to take them more seriously as well. Susie says she never misses an opportunity to share her story. Her heart attacks were caused by stress.
And who's always the last one to get taken care of? It's mom. And don't realize it until something like this happens.
All right, so that's the main takeaway here. Listen to your symptoms and be very adamant about getting checked for these heart issues. They can mimic a stomach flu in some women, and that's got also that added uneasiness and pain. Back to you.
Now, I'd also
want to
know...
Oops,
stop that. I'd also want to know the racial makeup of this study, and I'd like to see it more race-focused. Because that woman that they were interviewing who was sharing her story, she was not white, right? And then everyone talking around her was all white, all right? Enter and Esting. And, of course, Phoenix Cleater made these show notes on Wednesday. So, of course, a story like this is in Phoenix Cleater's show notes. And this is on First Coast News. It's ABC and looks like NBC affiliated. not 100% sure there by those logos. Is that Peacock? Is that NBC? All right, let's take a look here. So we're going in Florida, and somebody got arrested. That happens in Florida. The feller's name is Robert Barr, 2 R's, a 28-year-old individual, and Kevin Keene, a 23-year-old individual. They were both charged with first-degree misdemeanors of illegal possession of an alligator, illegal exhibition of dangerous wildlife, and cruelty to animals. Mr. Barr, who goes by Robbie Stratton on the Facebooks, was the one who originally posted the video to the Social 5 media. The FWZ, Florida Wildlife Commission, is still trying to identify other individuals shown in the video of the incident, and asked that anyone who has information to contact the wildlife hotline at 888-404-3922. And they were arrested for chasing people with an alligator. And that's that video that you hear that's just auto-playing on this website, even though I don't fucking want it to. All right. Phoenix Collider's extended show notes. More white-on-white crime. Where is this one? Indian River County, the Sebastian Daily. I see Vero Beach. Is this Florida still? A Florida man who made a mess at a McDonald's restaurant challenges a police officer to a fight once he gets to the jail, according to the report. On Sunday, at approximately 9:30 in the p.m., employees at the McDonald's located at 1925 U.S. Highway 1 called the police fellers about a man making a mess in the restaurant. The officers arrived and found a man identified as the 31-year-old individual Benjamin Elias Dom, sleeping in a chair surrounded by several packets of sauce and food on the floor. Police woke him up and asked him if he had been drinking after they smelled a strong odor of alcohol. His response was, "Yeah, bit, but the fuck you gonna do about it?" End quote, he asked the overseer, according to the report. The police fellers then confirmed that Mr. Dom was trespassed from the location a month prior and arrested for disorderly intoxication. Mr. Dom was arrested and charged with trespassing and disorderly intoxication on the way to the Indian River County Jail. Mr. Dom challenged the police fellers. He said, quote, "I'm gonna fuck you up, bitch. You just wait until we get to the jail, bitch." End quote. I had to use the B word there as quoting Mr. Dom. Oh, damn. I like that. You know how when you're reading these articles, there'll be a link to another one sort of in between paragraphs. And this link says, more drunk man in McDonald's drive-thru. Quote, "I'm feeling pretty good." Okay. Whatever that story's about. Continuing with this one, according to jail records, Mr. Dom has been arrested a few times this year on alcohol-related charges. In March, Mr. Dom was arrested after having an open container in Vero Beach city limits. He was seen drinking with several homeless individuals at a vacant lot, and residents called the police fellers about the noise. Additionally, last month, he was arrested after he trashed a 7-Eleven store in Vero Beach. Okay. They're having a good time down there. That's literally how the article ends. And it's just like, there's mug shots and stuff in here. You can click on them. All right. I cannot get to all of these, so I think I'll look into maybe one more white-on-white crime. This is coming off of Complex.com. Texas man arrested for smuggling a shark out of an aquarium in a baby stroller. This posted by Sarah Jasmine Montgomery for Complex.com. San Antonio is arguably the most chill city in Texas. It boasts of the best basketball franchise ever. Really. You know what? I say that like I don't really know what they do on the basketballs. They slam dunk. Are they still doing that? Do they still have the double dribble and traveling? Do they still have the shake and bake and break your ankles? Are they doing the crossover? Are they still doing the bounce pass? I'd like to see if they're still doing the bounce pass and maybe even the behind the back pass. So that'd be pretty interesting to see. I don't watch the basketball. I don't get it. They claim to have the best grocery store in existence, okay, and tons of activities such as the local aquarium. Now, on Saturday, two men fellers and a woman lady and a baby were caught on security cameras leaving the aquarium after snatching a 16-inch female horn shark from its tank and placing it in the child's stroller. Okay. Miss Helen is the name of the shark, is still very much alive and well, and the case is already closed. But how did these people get the balls to steal a whole shark, and why? Quote from a news outlet. The suspects staked out the pool for more than an hour. This is coming off of CNN. And waiting for the right moment, the aquarium said in a statement. According to the officials, the aquarium was a the attack on the aquarium was planned, and the thieves and their had used their own net. Okay, the Leon Valley Police Chief Joseph Savaggio told the local outlet KSAT, said, quote, we thought it was kind of a hoax, being that it was Shark Week last week. But it turns out someone actually went inside the aquarium and stole a horn shark. That's what's going on with these folks out here. That's what's happening. That's Phoenix Cleater's show notes. She also has something going on with Missy Elliott on the Twitter. One in eight couples blame student loan debt on their divorce. Man arrested for back-to-back shootings in Arkansas Pass, Portland. And a Becky Lives Matter story from the Miami Herald. She embezzled $225,000 to pay back the other company that she stole from. That's fun. All right, so let's get to a Green News Report and wrap this thing up, because I got to go to work early for a meeting.
It's Tuesday, August 7, 2018.
The winds kicked up, the temperatures kicked up, the humidities went down, and then we started getting really erratic fire behavior.
Northern California wildfire, now the largest in state history.
An unusual number of dead animals have been washing up on Florida's shores this summer.
Toxic algae blooms wreaking havoc in Florida.
It's a summer that's already seen a number of temperature records smashed across the Northern Hemisphere, and now...
Europe's heat wave has made Sweden shorter.
Wait, what?
Plus...
A huge award today in the third lawsuit in our state focusing on hog waste.
North Carolina jury awards nearly $500 million in damages against hog farms.
All of that hog waste and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
They say that greedy trial attorneys are endangering the future of agriculture.
Yes, it's those greedy trial attorneys again who are endangering the future of agriculture. I knew it. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, no offense intended, but today's Green News Report stinks.
Yes.
On several levels.
Yes, indeed it does. But we'll get to that in a moment. First, in Northern California, President Donald Trump has issued an official disaster declaration for the state, freeing up federal funds to assist in the response and recovery from 17 large wildfires that have destroyed more than 1,000 homes and killed at least 8 people. The National Weather Service has confirmed that the Carr Fire near Redding generated a rare fire tornado that was the equivalent equivalent of an EF3 tornado, only made of fire. But the fast-moving Mendocino Complex fire is actually even worse. Over the weekend, it doubled in size to become the largest fire in state history, breaking the record set by the Thomas Fire just last year. The state has already spent about a third of its annual fire budget, and the height of the season is still yet to come. In a press conference, Democratic Governor Jerry Brown warned that California's fire season is projected to get worse and is an ominous sign of our global warming future.
We're in a new normal. Over a decade or so, we're going to have more fire, more destructive fire, more billions that will have to be spent on it, more adaptation, more prevention. So all that is the new normal that we have to face.
Scientists are also mocking President Trump's bizarre tweets on California's wildfires as, quote, comedically ill-informed. In a weekend tweet, Trump didn't mention firefighters or any of the victims or their families, but instead inexplicably asserted that California's water is, quote, being diverted into the Pacific Ocean. Those are called rivers, Mr. President. Rivers are where California's billion-dollar salmon industry comes from. And fire officials say there is no shortage of water for firefighting.
It was a short tweet, but this is only a six-minute episode of the Green News Report, so there is no way to adequately respond to the idiocy that he was able to pack into 280 characters. In that ridiculous tweet.
And the ongoing extreme heat wave across Europe is forcing nuclear plants to ramp down because the water that they use for cooling the reactors, whether it be from rivers or the ocean, is actually now too warm to do the job. Spain, Portugal, and France are hovering at or near all-time high national heat records, and the European heat wave has literally made Sweden's tallest peak shorter. It's no longer the country's highest point because the melting glacier on top of it lost 13 feet in the month of July alone.
Wow.
But the heat is also on in Florida, where it's causing toxic algae blooms in both inland freshwaters and in the ocean. It's linked to both rising temperatures and fertilizer pollution. We previously reported on a toxic green algae bloom that's befouling freshwater areas like Lake Okeechobee. But in the Gulf of Mexico, an extended, unprecedented toxic red tide algae bloom has killed thousands of fish and manatees on the west coast of Florida and generated noxious fumes that have sent residents to the hospital with respiratory problems and affected 100 miles of shoreline.
See, that's what I mean. This Green News Report stinks.
But there is some good news regarding noxious fumes. In North Carolina, a federal jury has awarded nearly $500 million in damages to six neighbors of industrial hog farms contracted by the Smithfield Corporation. The jury agreed with homeowners that the stench from massive lagoons of manure generated by nearly 8,000 hogs every day created an intolerable, inescapable odor that attracted insects and reduced the value of their properties and their ability to live there. It's the third victory for homeowners challenging hog farms' waste management. Naturally, North Carolina's Republican majority state legislature has moved into action, passing laws to restrict the rights of homeowners to bring such lawsuits against hog farms in the future.
Some good news regarding noxious fumes, a phrase you're likely to only hear on the Green News Report. Thank you very much. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
All right, folks, let's get out of here. Let's tie this thing off. I am 35 years old. It's August 9th right now, officially on the calendar and birth certificate and ID and all that stuff. August 5th, I am 35 years old, which I've been interested in this age for many moons now, because that is the age my biological mother was when she died. So now, every day forward, I'm older than her. You can dig it, right? She was born in 1958, but she did not get to make it past 35. So now I'm aging past her. Like, I can no longer, like, really take new teachings from her, because, like, everything would be new and fresh. Like, how was she approaching her 20s? What was this idea that she gave me? How does she influence me in this way? And it's like, you know, in 5 years, I'm going to be 40. You know, and I'm going to have experiences that she didn't get to have. You know, I'm going to have to figure stuff out without her influence over it, without an idea of what her input would be in the back of my head. You know, I think she did the best she could, but she knew she was on her way out of there, of course, thanks to white supremacy, homophobia, and whatnot. She's dead. Not because she was gay, but because my biological father was definitely probably bi or pansexual or something. And, you know, when AIDS was rocking out, he was in the closet, you know, out there, you know, rocking out, who knows, at the clubs or whatever scene he was in. And then brought that AIDS back to my biological mother, and she died from it, and he was still kicking around in 2016. Like, he's just a carrier. And, and so, of course, to homophobia, white supremacy, the whole business, all that stuff. She died in 1993, 35 years old. That's as far as she got to go. And now I am moving forward past the finish line that was predetermined for her by the systems around her. So I guess let's move forward. And Phoenix Kalita is not well. She'll go down to the hospital doctors today and see what's going on. See if she can't get some light anti-inflammatory deals and get some of that medicine. And she'll see if she can, kind of bounce back a bit. All right. PayPal.me/PhoenixAndWilliam. Patreon.com/WineCellarMediaFund. Have a good one.